Welcome to Ritual of Practice Podcast. I am your host, Angela Houghton. The intention of this podcast is to inspire your practice. I thought it would be fun to offer stories of how different people integrate practice in their lives. I am so appreciative of the humans that share their experience on this podcast, and to you, listener, for joining us. May you show up for what lights you up. Hi there. Today on the podcast, I have the honor of sitting down with a really dear friend of mine, Chloe Hedden. Chloe lives in Austin, Texas, but she grew up close to where I currently live in a little town called Castle Valley, Utah. So today we're going to talk about her passion and practice of art. And I realized really my ignorance in speaking about art. I'm realizing that in different subjects that I don't spend a lot of time. And so it was fun to hear her talk about how her mediums have changed over the years and how just the breadth that she has of, creating with different mediums was fun to visit in this conversation. I also really enjoyed hearing how she uses art to process big emotions and really just the showing up with consistency, how that looks in her life currently. So I highly encourage you to listen to the end of this episode because most of the best nuggets come out near the end. Well, you may not agree with that. That's my feeling on it. I was getting pretty wowed towards the end. And so thank you so much for being here. And now we'll lead into the conversation with Chloe. Hello, beautiful.
Hello, Angela. Oh, it's been way too long.
It really has. Yes. I was actually, in thinking about our interview this morning, trying to remember what year it would have been we first met. I mean, I know where we met, but I was trying to think of what year that would have been.
I think it was 2003.
That's what my guess would be, like 2002 or 2003. You were the barista at Chili Pepper Bike Shop.
Yes, I was.
Like many lifetimes ago, not just one lifetime ago, many lifetimes ago.
We had so much fun.
We did. And I was thinking, I feel like we connected over fashion and dancing.
Yes, we did. Absolutely.
Oh, do you remember? Well, that actually isn't what we're on the show to talk about today. We're on the show today to talk about your art, which I am also just, so grateful to own a piece or actually multiple pieces of your art. I think of the really big one. So I moved it from the general living space is now has bookshelves where it was initially, and now it's in my bedroom. And I feel like I actually get to enjoy it more in my bedroom. So yeah, I love it so much.
Yeah, I think the flowers are better when you get to stare at them for a while.
Yeah, and almost just, disappear into them.
Yeah, they're meditative spaces.
Your crystals too. So I'll include in the show notes links to your website and other ways for people to find you and follow so they can actually experience your art as well and not just the story behind it. So
thank you, Angela. Yeah, I mean, the crystals, the flowers, and now I'm doing a lot of abstract work as well. And I think what it all has in common is a meditation on light. Hmm. And the textures of the pieces allow the mind to travel, sort of gives you an entry point. But I want them to be luminous, meditative spaces for the mind and the heart to just explore, And I think that's one of the things that makes an artwork great is when it's always interesting to look at, even if you've seen it 1,000 times, it sort of draws you in. Yeah.
I agree. And that, makes me appreciate that much more why I love it, because I feel very drawn to the light, both internally and externally. I'm like, must open all the blinds. It's actually was hard for me to close, even though you can see through the curtains behind me, to close them energetically at this time of the day is challenging for me because I want the light.
Yeah.
Let's get to the part where it all started. Do you remember when you first became interested in art or practicing art?
I mean, I think it was before I could walk. I was very small, and somebody put a pen and paper in front of me, and I just instantly started drawing. And I was drawing people. I was drawing kind of like stick figures, right? And they all had really long legs. And my parents thought it was so funny. Like, why does our daughter draw people with really long legs? And then I think they realized, oh, that's what it looks like from her perspective down on the floor. I think I was just born that way. I've always been an artist. And I was lucky to be born into a family where that was encouraged. So when I was little, I was kind of a hellion, and my parents tried to take me to preschool and it didn't work. I basically got kicked out.
What is that?
I was doing cartwheels in the class and being disruptive and hiding under my desk and just like not buying the program. So they homeschooled me for a while, and my dad would give me assignments, and he would give me a little canvas and a box of acrylic paints. And he'd say, okay, this is a Picasso. Here's a photo of a Picasso, and I want you to paint it. So he had me copying, you know, Renoir and Leonardo da Vinci and Cezanne and Monet and stuff when I was four. And that was really exciting. I mean, I was studying deeply, you know, immersed in these old master paintings, trying to understand how they were doing the brushwork and the colors and everything from a very young age. And then I remember visiting my family. We'd go to Hawaii every winter for family reunions. And my Aunt Deed was a playwright from New York. And she said, when you grow up, you're going to go to the Rhode Island School of Design for college. And you're going to study art. So I think it was in me, sort of as an innate talent, but then my family really fostered it and encouraged me. So
that gives me the goosebumps that, you know, the people in our lives that gently, like what you're doing. Did you have resistance to that or curiosity?
I admired Deed so much that when she said you should go to the Rhode Island School of Design, I just thought, oh, well, that's obviously where I should go. Mm-hmm. And it kind of set me on that course, which is funny because when I got into high school, I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. And I had visited Princeton. I was trying to get into Princeton to study psychology and maybe double major in art and be an art therapist or something. And I wasn't even going to apply to RISD. I'd kind of like shifted my focus. And then an application just showed up at my house in the mail. I don't know who did that or if it was fate, because I had gone to an art high school. So all the art schools knew my name. And maybe they sent it just because they knew who I was, but maybe it was a family member. I'm not sure. But I ended up just applying over a weekend on a whim just to see. And I didn't get into Princeton, but I got into RISD. So that ended up also really changing my life, because RISD is such an art school. Like, you learn to be a fine artist and a designer, but you don't learn anything else. So...
Like the business side of things? Is that what you mean by anything else? Or
No, they do teach some of the business side of art for sure. But like, it wasn't a very well-rounded curriculum. I wasn't studying, you know, organic chemistry and statistics and some of the other stuff that people go through in college. It was just art and design and a little bit of English. And I studied poetry at Brown because that was fun for me. But yeah.
Based on proximity, because you could?
Yeah, so RISD and Brown, their campuses basically interlock. And if you're a RISD student, you're allowed to take courses at Brown. The problem is when I was there, the semesters didn't really meet up. So you had to like stay over Christmas break and come back early in the summer and stuff like that, and like stay in a hotel for a couple weeks until RISD housing opened. But now they have changed their schedule so that they align, and there's actually a linking degree. People can apply to both schools. They just have to say, you know, what is the creative major that they want to do, and you can do a dual major. And I think if I had to do it again, that's probably what I would do, because you know, Brown's academic programs are incredible and RISD's art and design programs are incredible. So you could really make something amazing.
It's great advice too.
Anyone with children out there.
Well, that leads me back to where we were just a moment ago with the art high school. Was that driven by you or by your family?
So my Aunt Jane, who lived in Oregon, married a man named David Bales, who was a pretty famous photographer. And he ended up giving the commencement address at the Idyllwild Arts Academy, which is in Southern California. It's in Idyllwild, which is a little mountain town sort of outside of LA up in the mountains. And he was really impressed with their curriculum and their, you know, their teachers, their students, everything. He loved it. So he was telling me how great it was. And I thought, well, there's a high school completely dedicated to the arts. And I was suffering through, you know, Grand County High School at that point. And I loved the idea of going to an arts high school. So I applied and I got in and I went and I only spent a semester. It was a little hard for me to be away from home and staying in dorms and eating terrible food. And I wasn't quite ready for that at age 15 or 16 or whatever it was. So I came back and I finished out at Grand County. It's partially because my mom got sick and I was feeling really far from her and whatever, kid stuff. But it was a really amazing experience to be around. You know, it was like the best, most talented visual artists, but also music and dance and theater from, you know, all over the world. They had an incredible symphony orchestra.
So how wonderful to be able to dip into that, though, even though it was just a semester. And also, it sounds like, again, the hand of grace, you know, just with the timing of a family member, her extended family member doing that, just all of those pieces that linked up. I mean,
I was very lucky. I had a lot of wonderful adults in my life who encouraged me and opened doors for me. And actually, my roommate at Idyllwild was this woman named Agnes, who lived in Austria. And she invited me to come visit her for like 2 months in the summer after that year. So I went to Austria and her family just took care of me and took me all over Europe and showed me all kinds of incredible art. And we were in Italy in a villa for, you know, like 3 weeks with all these teenagers. It was so much fun. And I got completely obsessed with Italy. So when I went to RISD, they had a study abroad program in Italy. So I applied to that. And that's one of the best memories of my life, was a year in Rome doing independent study when I was 21. Mm. It was amazing.
I imagine there's a lot that stands out from that time period. Is there a couple things in particular that made it one of the best memories of your life?
Well, I think it was just being that age. You know, I think there's something about your late teens, early 20s, when you're just full of energy and you want to explore the world and different cultures. You want to see as much as possible. And, you know, at that time, it was before the EU. So Italy was still like very much just Italian. And most Italians didn't speak any English. So I was really having to learn another language and navigate another culture. And we would go travel all over Europe and, you know, just with a group of really interesting, talented, weird art friends, you know, seeing the world through a little bit different lens. And it was just an incredible experience. And then we had really great teachers who would come and do critiques with us. And we had our own studio space. So it was an opportunity to really delve into my creativity with almost no limitations and see what was there. Mm-hmm. And that's when I first got into abstract art. And I knew that I wanted to be an abstract painter eventually, but I felt like I wasn't ready for it, that I was going to have to come to it through some kind of, I don't know, circuitous journey through realism.
You sensed that there, your intuition told you this is where I'm headed, but I need some other experiences first.
Yeah. So I'm making abstract wall sculptures and like these really thick paint things now. And I'm working a lot with fabric. But just over the last couple of weeks, I've been getting this bug to delve into abstract painting, like large scale oil on canvas. I think I know what I want to do. So stay tuned.
All right. How did you hone in on your medium? So with acrylics, how did that come to be?
Well, I mean, for the longest time, I just painted oil on canvas. You know, that's sort of the classical method. And it's what I learned in college in the illustration department. And I love it. There's nothing quite like it. But what's happened in the art world in general over the last 20 years is that art has become so much more interesting in terms of process and materials. People are really delving into all of the possibilities of what can be done and resurrecting old eras of art. And there was maybe a genre that didn't get fully explored. People are really exploring it now. And I love that we're in this time of like mashup in the art world. And if you go to the big art fairs, you can see so many different creative, weird things happening with materials. And I also work as an art consultant and I run a gallery. And so part of my job is looking at other artists' work and getting inspired. And so I went from sort of painting, I did children's books in my 20s and a lot of illustration. I also painted realist landscapes and flowers. And then my late 20s, I went pretty much exclusively to painting big flowers, oil on canvas. And then in 2012 or 13, I added big crystals because I was teaching yoga at a studio in Malibu and I saw this incredible huge crystal doing amazing things with the light. And I thought that could be a painting. So that led down a whole other rabbit hole. But it wasn't until 2016 that I just started buying all kinds of weird materials at the art store and doing experiments in my studio. And it was kind of like my therapy. I needed to go back and sort of relearn the basics and just make a mess. And so I was throwing paint at the canvas. I was cutting things up. I was destroying things. I was making sculptures. I was just being messy and wasting a lot of money at the art store. But it made me so happy. And the best of those experiments branched off into a couple different bodies of work. So there are the textile wall sculptures, the wood wall sculptures, and then the thick paint paintings, which I call excesses. They're related to the excessivism movement in art, which is all about just the too muchness of capitalism. You know, the extractive, wasteful nature of how we handle, you know, and relate to the earth. And then also the sort of colors that are popular in advertising that are just designed to grab people's attention. So I was using a lot of fluorescent paint, you know, bright, bright, bright colors. The irony is that that series was meant as a political commentary, but people love them and want them, and they're always, you know, commissioning them, and they just think of it as like color and texture for their wall. So a lot of people don't understand, you know, the deeper connotations of that work. But yeah, that's how I got into it.
That was really fun to listen to. And do you still create the large crystals and flowers that are realistic?
I do. So I'm bouncing around doing a lot of different things right now. I spent a year painting a series of big crystals for a show that just opened in Denver in November. So that was up for 2 months. And it wasn't a solo show. It was a group show, but the show was all about light. So that was fun. And then I just did a flower painting for the first time in a year because I took a year off for crystals. And I'm about to do another few flowers. And the textile sculptures have evolved. So now I'm working with linen that's all hand dyed in these like beautiful colors. Some of them are vegetable dyes, some of them aren't. I would like to get to the point where they're mostly vegetable dyes and they're sort of in ombre colors. So like dipped for different lengths of time. And then I dip those in a adhesive mixture. And then I sculpt those. And those are called inundations. Because I've been thinking so much about grief lately. For me, it's been the last few years have been tough. I lost my aunt, who was pretty much like my best friend, and my mom and my sister all rolled into one. And then my family left Castle Valley, which was home for me in Utah. And I have really just, it was like cutting off a limb, losing that place and moving away. So I've been going through so much grief. And so this series for me is the way of like understanding and exploring grief. It's the quality of water and also the weight of gravity that pulls the sculptures down as they dry. So it's just like working with these forces. And I've been thinking so much about like the state of our planet and the floods. I feel like this, particularly this past year, we're just hearing about so many floods, heat waves, and then torrential rains and big storms and floods and inundations. And so like the similarities between what's happening to our planet and what's happening in my own body with, you know, my own grief. And yeah, just there's so many layers to it. But for me, the working with the fabric is also sort of thinking about the history of feminism and also how women have been treated. I read this really interesting book called On Our Best Behavior this past year. And it's sort of about the history of the patriarchy and how women have more or less been slaves for 8,000 years. Like we were only allowed to have our own bank accounts in the 1970s. And for the longest time, the only art available to women was textile art. We were allowed to make clothes, to sew, you know, to work with tapestries and stuff like that. Maybe we could paint a still life, you know, if we came from a really wealthy family that could afford paint and art lessons. But mostly it was textiles. And women were always washing laundry, you know, scrubbing, working with fabric in water. So for me, it's like all these layers of what's happened with women, what's the work that we've been allowed, that we've been forced to do, and also the art that we've been allowed to do, and how what we're doing to the planet is very similar to what happened to women. And so it's just like, for me, there's so much happening there. So I'm working with this series with the fabric called The Inundations. And I'm about to do a big one that I'm really excited about. So I've been doing smaller ones, sort of like testing the medium, learning how it works. But I'm going to do a really big one with all different colors and sort of painting with fabric and sculpting as I go. And my ultimate dream, and I don't know if I can figure out an easy way to orchestrate this because my studio is so small, but I want to get a group of women together. And we all work as a group to make one of these, because it feels like, you know, the concept is really about women in the, you know, working together, being together. And I think, you know, people are so afraid of grief because it carries negative connotation and it can be very difficult. But I don't think that there's any way that we get out of the place that we're in collectively unless we go through our grief. That's one of the first steps. It's just accepting like how sad this all is. So.
Oh, Chloe, this is really deep. And it's interesting. This actually came up in my last interview as well with another dear friend that is leading women and really making an effort to heal this collective damage. And she's approaching it through yoga and meditation and healing the yoni. And she's, it just, yeah, it, what came up in our conversation is just what you said, which I reflect more and more often how it's been such a very short time that we've had the right to vote. Like that just, that just that simple fact kind of blows my mind. And I think about the little girls today, like my stepdaughter and her best friend, the songs that they're singing, just what a different experience. And, you know, so each generation, how we kind of set it up for queue up the next generation. And it's really beautiful. And yeah, it's thank you for sharing it so deeply with the listeners, because this is really powerful. And it's, I think it's really amazing that women are speaking out about this more and more. I think we have in our small circles and with each other and tried to understand it in our, you know, relationships. I know I've tried to understand it in my relationships, and what I've come to is more confusion in historically. But I think I have actually made some headway with that this past year through my own grief. And understanding where I was bumping up against this, really this historical ancestral pain, and not knowing how to deal with it in the now. And so wanting to be a change maker and wanting to lead in this new way. And yet there's all these, I want to choose my words carefully, because I do, and this came up in the, like, I love men, and I don't necessarily consider myself, I don't know, I think feminism has such a, it can have a negative connotation for a lot of people. I am, you know, I want to be an uplifter of women, and I also want to bring men along on this journey and this ride.
Absolutely.
In some ways, they're getting left behind. And I think they're confused. Like, we're confused and they're confused. It's like, how do we navigate? Not everyone, you know, we're finding our way, but there's definitely been like a shakeup, and paradigms are shifting.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the big misconceptions that a lot of people have, is that feminism is anti-male, because it shouldn't be. It's just about helping women to achieve equality. And I think one of the things that I've been trying to explain to people, and especially to men, is that patriarchy, it doesn't serve men either. It's done all kinds of terrible things to them. And so we basically have to build a new world where we re-understand who we are. There's so much knowledge that we already have as humans. I think especially if we go back into Aboriginal and Indigenous wisdom about how to live in harmony with each other and with this planet, that we, you know, stuff that we have lost that we have to remember. And I think honoring the feminine in ourselves and in each other is a huge part of that, because if we can do that, then we can also honor the earth. Mm-hmm. And but that does not mean not, you know, honoring men as well. Like, obviously we all have to come together on this one. Mm-hmm. So
I want to go back to when you shared that you started to get messy and how fun it was. And mm-hmm. was that after your aunt, your beloved aunt, passed? Was that the same time, or did that happen before? And then this has just continued to.
That happened before. It happened in 2016, and she passed in 2018. So yes, I definitely did a lot of messy stuff after she died too, because it is a great, I mean, being creative, working with your hands, going beyond words and beyond the mind to a certain extent, I think is a really good way of working with grief and any kind of difficult emotion, especially stuff that's like stored in the body. But for me, it was actually, no shock to anyone listening, I'm fairly progressive. So when Trump got elected in 2016, it was hard for me. You know, I was going through a lot of grief about the state of the world and feeling like we'd taken a huge step back, and worrying about what it meant for women and the environment and everything like that. So I was processing my grief about the world. That's what prompted me to get really messy.
So was it kind of like a F this, everything's going to hell anyway, I'm going to just like get messy? Or was it something you read or someone you talked to that you were like, no, okay.
I just needed an outlet, because I was, you know, my oil paintings are fairly controlled. Every brushstroke needs to be intentional. I need to think about how I'm placing it, because the brushstrokes follow the curvature of the petals, the energy and the growth form of the petal. So with a flower, every brushstroke is a curve. And with the crystals, every brushstroke is a straight line. But they also follow the growth, you know, structure of the crystal. So, you know, that's a very sort of meditative but controlled practice. So I just needed something that could get the yuck out. I needed to like have an ugly, messy process that could take what was inside of me and alchemize it. And a lot of that art got thrown away because it was truly terrible, but it set me on a new path of exploration. I needed to just loosen up.
Oh, Chloe.
Accept the mess.
This means so much to the listeners. And I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to any episodes yet, but you know, someone doesn't have to be interested in art to really gain so much from hearing your story. And just that willing to get messy and then also willing to throw it away when you're an artist that, you know, this is how you're making a living. And like, I've read a lot about creativity and yeah, that willingness to play, have fun is the doorway, you know, to the growth and expansion.
Absolutely. It's really important. Yeah. I think you just have to be able to access the full range of your skills and emotions as an artist, because you never know what the muse is going to be asking of you. So it's good to just sort of keep it fresh, mix it up a little bit. I always encourage my friends to do that who are artists.
Do you find that you're more willing now, like, to do that in other ways after kind of feeling and
felt? Yes. Yeah, I think it reverberates into your life in all ways, you know?
Yeah. Do you see yourself practicing art for the rest of your life?
Absolutely. I'm stuck as an artist. I don't think that I would be very good at anything else. And I've discovered, you know, looking at art, whether it's my art or somebody else's art, and having art around me stimulates so much dopamine in my brain. Like, my job makes me happy all day, every day. And I feel so lucky to have that. I know a lot of people don't feel that way about what they're doing with their lives, you know? And, you know, almost all of it is fun for me.
Thank you for sharing that. It is truly a gift. And you're right that not everyone gets to experience that. Yeah. And I think it's also important, because we've known each other for so long, to just acknowledge that you weren't always making a living from your art, that there were periods where you were doing other...
Working as a barista?
I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, probably so many other things.
Yeah. Well, it was... You know, when I graduated from RISD, it was right after 9/11 and the economy was a little bit shaky, but it picked up, I would say by 2004, I was able to totally make a living with my art. And so much so that I actually moved to San Francisco and supported myself just on my art in my 20s until 2008. And that really wiped out the economy. So 2008 to like 2011, I didn't sell hardly a single piece of art. It's so bad. And at that same time, a big gallery in Park City picked up my work and more than quadrupled my prices. So like all the people who had bought my work before suddenly couldn't afford it. So that was a little bit of a stretch. But by 2012, I was living in Los Angeles and I had to figure out, you know, some new way of making a living. And so I was searching through art jobs in LA and I ended up getting this job as a creative director of a fine art consultancy, which felt really fortuitous because I learned about the business side of art through that. I learned about, you know, who's buying art, what do they buy, why do they buy it? How do you present to those clients? And then I became the artist liaison. So my job was interfacing with the artists, finding artists, and then creating presentations for clients. So I was just immersed in the art world and it's continued ever since.
What prompted the move from Malibu to Austin?
Well, I moved from Malibu to Oregon, to Boulder, to Moab, to Austin.
Somehow I forgot that journey. No, okay, I can picture you. Yes, someone has since bought the house that you were living in before you left Moab again, but I can still picture you there. Yeah, okay, so yeah, I suppose there's so many stories then. Maybe let's just focus on what brought you to Austin, like where you're currently living.
Well, my parents decided I had moved back to Moab to be closer to my aging parents in 2018. And then during the pandemic, they got a wild hair and decided to sell and move to Maine. So I was sitting there going, wait. And Khaki wanted to sell the house that I was living in. So I knew I needed to move. I wasn't sure where. And I was talking to a girlfriend who is an opera singer from LA, who I'm very, very close to. And she said, I just moved to Austin. You're going to love it. You got to move down here. Join me. So I started looking on Zillow. I found a place. I called, got a hold of a realtor. He took me on a FaceTime tour and we put in an offer, all within like 8 hours of thinking, maybe I'll look at Austin. I'd put in an offer on a house that had been accepted. So it was a little bit of a crazy pandemic Zillow thing, but I'm really glad I did it.
Yeah.
I like it down here.
So you're in the same house that you bought on that whim right now. Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite part of living in Austin?
You know, when we're not having ice storms, the winters down here are amazing. Like right now, it's sunny and it's going to be 65 degrees today.
Oh, wow.
And it's green and I can go work in my garden. I'm not a big winter person. So I really like that. And then there's a big music scene here, obviously, but there's also a visual arts scene. And I'm deeply immersed in that. So I'm meeting so many interesting artists and I'm working with a couple consultants here. So we're doing big spas and banks and corporate projects and residential and putting museum quality art in people's homes. It's really fun. And I built a studio in my backyard so I can just go out and paint 7 days a week because I don't get weekends.
When you say working with a consultant, so are you then choosing the art or is this consultant coming to you for your art or is it a combination?
So these projects are big enough that it requires the teams of consultants. So one of the businesses is called CoCollect. They're really cool. They work with private. So art collectors often can't help themselves and they collect more art than will fit in their homes. And so they have storage units full of art and nobody's really appreciating it. And, you know, it may be accruing value, but it's great for them to be able to basically lease that art out. So we help collectors lease their art to homeowners who have big blank walls. So CoCollect has also acquired a lot of their own art. So they have, I don't know, at this point, it's maybe 300 pieces of art and people can live with it for a year and then they can renew their membership and keep the same art or get new art. So we're constantly like moving the collection around to different people. And it's just gone national. We were just in Austin, but now it's everywhere. So anybody who wants to have museum quality art in their home can.
Oh, wow.
So I'm working with them. And then I'm working with another consultant here, Margot Tate Art Advisory. And she's been doing a lot of big projects. So I've been helping her with that.
That sounds really fun. It's like you get to play with art and visualize and creative. Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful because the important part of that is understanding your client. So getting to know who they are, what makes them tick, what they're looking for in an art collection, mm-hmm. and then really personalizing it to their needs. Mm-hmm. So I'm always having to research new art and learn about new artists. And the art world's massive. There is so much to know.
I can imagine that you're really good at that. And I had forgotten until we started talking and you mentioned San Francisco and that when we were both living in that area that you created that gorgeous, I still love that logo. And I feel like you completely heard me a client, you know, obviously friend, but like as your client, I feel like you really heard what I was looking for and created it so beautifully.
And
that wasn't even your medium. You were like, oh yeah, I can do that. I can help you with that. Yeah, I still love that logo. Still love what you created.
Oh, thank you.
Have you taught art skills to others? Is this something you've done?
Yeah, I taught a fair amount of art at different points in my life. I taught some public art classes when I was in my 20s living in Moab. I taught drawing and painting. And then I've taught private clients 101. And there was a little bit of time when I lived in LA when I was teaching yoga and painting. And that was really fun.
Ooh, I want to take that.
I would do a yoga class for creativity and do a lot of breath work towards the end. And then I would roll out a huge piece of paper, like 20 feet long and 4 feet wide, and I would get out finger paints, and people would just like continue the yoga practice, but covered in paint, and make big, messy things. And sometimes people would take all their clothes off and cover themselves in paint, roll on the paper.
You were naked, because this actually just came up in yoga last week or the week before, the naked yoga class. There was a teacher at the studio that really wanted to teach naked yoga. And I just couldn't wrap my mind over like all the responsibility as the business owner. But you're saying this just happened spontaneously. People got naked.
I'm sure the yoga studio probably wouldn't have been super thrilled if they knew that was happening, but.
So like no underwear or anything, like completely naked.
Yeah. Just exploring their creativity.
All right. It actually sounds really fun. So is that something that is of interest to you? Not the getting naked and covering yourself in paint, although you may be interested in that as well. But teaching, doing more teaching, is that something that
I think at some point I may come back to that. Right now I have a small art gallery, and what I'm sort of working with the artists who are part of my gallery to do bi-monthly Zoom calls where we all support each other, share resources. If anybody wants a critique, we can do a critique. So we'll see, you know, I think for me, that's like a little bit more mentoring than teaching. But I may get back into teaching at some point. I definitely think about it. I love sharing and inspiring people. And I think one of the things that I'm at least decent at is looking at someone's art practice and helping them problem solve. Like if there's somewhere that they've been stuck, or how they could take it to the next level and challenge themselves.
Yeah, that seems important. And I think of you as someone very disciplined and, you know, just being your friend. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I can be very disciplined. There are also places in my life where I just totally fall apart, like folding laundry, for example. But like I'm not a Virgo. We'll just say that.
He's a Scorpio, y'all.
Surprise, surprise.
The reason I ask that, because I think about the regularity of you creating art. And then I think about, my own creative endeavors and what it takes to show up with consistency, and then how I get out of my own way. So my question is, how do you get out of your own way when you find yourself struggling with the consistency or perhaps the discipline? Yeah, just showing up for your practice. What does that look like to get out of your own way?
I mean, I think consistency is really key. And I'm lucky in that I basically can't wait to get out to my studio. That's not really a hurdle. Sometimes I get out there and I'm like, oh, I'm going to make a cup of tea. And which audiobook or what am I going to? Which podcast, what am I going to listen to? And, oh, look, I need to clean this over here and I'm going to organize everything. I mean, that's part of getting ready to make art. Mm-hmm. There's something that has to happen in the mind to kind of open up to the space of actually being creative. And then there's an aspect of it that's chop wood, carry water. Like you just have to make a date with your creative self, and you have to show up. And sometimes when you start, when I start anyway, I don't feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. But I get into it as I go, and then there will be moments of transcendence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, such wisdom, Chloe. And the rituals, because when I think of making the cup of tea and then deciding what you're going to listen to, for me, those are little rituals that surround your practice. Mm-hmm. And a big part of the inspiration for this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so I had a spiritual teacher for a long time who was a pretty famous painter. And when he achieved self-realization, he left the art world and just went full time to teaching meditation and spiritual stuff. But he, you know, when he was talking about his time as a painter, he said, all that time spent like staring out the window, looking at clouds, or going for the long walk, or making the cup of tea, or whatever, like that is actually part of the art practice. Mm-hmm. Because you're kind of, you have to settle through layers of yourself, sort of like quieting the chatter, arriving, whatever it is, clearing the mind to a place where you're ready to make the art. And the actual art making act where you're productive might only be an hour, you know, or it could be so engrossing that you stay up all night doing it. Although I don't really do that. I'm more of like a 9-to-5 painter. Mm. I try to, you know, treat it like my job. And also I can't really see the colors at night. I got a full spectrum light, but I need daylight to paint.
Is that something you learned in college, like that about yourself, that you wanted to structure the 9-to-5, this is my job sort of energy, or is that something you developed later?
It's, you know, yes, you learn it in art school. You hear it from all kinds of art teachers. You hear it from professional artists. You read it in books about creativity and practice. I mean, everybody encourages that, sort of keeping a regular scheduled time, because writer's block, painter's block is real, right? And it plagues all of us. But I think if you show up, you have to, I think as an artist, you have to think of yourself as a vessel. We are very strong filters. We have personalities, we have all this stuff, right? But we're trying to show up so that the muse, which is something bigger than ourselves, can flow through us. And as much as we try, anything that comes through us is going to be colored by us. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be unique. It's going to have our fingerprint on it, whether we like it or not. But the job of as an artist is to show up. So for me, I'm at my easel from 9-to-5 every day saying, you know, here I am. If a little bit of magic sparkle could come down now, I'm here for it. You know, if you need to express something through me, I'm here. I think of myself as like a servant.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so, I'm rereading. Well, I don't know if I should say rereading. I'm reading more of Julia Cameron again. And she talks a lot about this, her, you know, connection to God and spirit or higher power through, you know, like that she's just the vessel, the muse, and like, here I am, use me, sort of.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think our job as an artist is to hone our skills so that we can translate what we're hearing or what we're feeling as clearly as possible.
Ooh, yes. That's beautiful, Chloe. Mm. Well, I have two more questions that have just been like, that I haven't been able to let go here as we are coming to a close of our interview. And one of them is, you know, for the young artist, someone who's just starting to find their way, is there, you know, sort of one thing that some advice or insight that you would share with them?
Oh, gosh. I mean, so much. There's so much to say to someone who's just starting out on this journey. But I would say that choosing the path of art is not easy, but that's not why we do it. I would say pursue art as a job. If not making art on a daily basis would crush you. Mm. Otherwise, it's okay to keep it as a hobby and a passion. You know, I think it's tricky as a professional artist to balance what we love doing, what nourishes us, with what the market wants and what sells. And so if you're trying to make a living, you often end up serving what sells. And the best artists stay true to their souls and they make what is being called forth for them. And then they figure out how, you know, the world monetizes it for them because it's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, you sort of just have to feel into what your relationship with art is, whether you want to pursue it as a living or if you want to keep it your special thing that's, you know, not about capitalism.
Mm. I actually am letting my last question go because I want to end on that, Chloe, because that was incredibly beautiful and such gorgeous insight to share. Thank you. Thank you so, so much. Like,
thank you.
This is, I mean, seeing your gorgeous face, it's such a treat for me.
I missed you.
I missed you. Like, just starting to, you know, how naturally we go to those deeper places together. It just reminds me so much of, you know, the essence of our friendship. And
yeah. Well, let's catch up soon.
I would love that. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Have a wonderful rest of your day, Chloe.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Again, such an honor to have Chloe sit down with me today and talk about her journey with art. So here are my takeaways. So the intention behind her work, what I experienced when she shared this is that we don't necessarily need others to understand the intention in the story that's coming through, the energy that's coming through what we create, but that doesn't mean that it's not there. So honoring that. And then I love what she shared about honing your skills and then connecting to a higher power and allowing yourself to be a vessel to let grace move through in whatever it is that you're creating. And then, of course, showing up with consistency. It was so gorgeous to hear her share her rituals and just really permission to have space in the creative process. And then this one is one of my favorites, play. Allow yourself to get messy, to try new things, to just do it for the sake of doing it. I feel like this is such an enormous takeaway in anything that we're doing or creating, is to not be so focused on the end result, the finished painting, the finished book, whatever it is, just allowing ourselves to create for the sake of creating. And then who knows what will come of that.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ritual of Practice podcast. You can find the show home at ritualofpractice.com. Follow us on your favorite listening platform to receive weekly inspiration for your practices. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone you love. Until next time, keep practicing.